We're just normal men.
What do you mean, normal men?
We're just innocent men.
Welcome to the Red Ass Podcast, your home for Aggie sports, barbecue, music, and much more. And now your hosts, Rob White and Roy May.
Howdy, guys. Welcome back to the Red Ass Podcast. Today is Tuesday, November 18th. I am Rob White, fighting Texas Aggie class of 2014.
And I am Roy May, fighting Texas Aggie class 2015. I forgot to pick game, so you go ahead and start talking.
Okay, well, the first thing I wanted to touch on today, just similar to last week, you know, we opened the show discussing Veterans Day and a lot of the important things that are around that particular holiday here in the United States. Well, there's a little remembrance going on in Aggieland today because 26 years ago at 2:42 in the morning, we lost 12 Aggies in the collapse of the A&M bonfire back in 1999. Another meetup took place once again over at the memorial, 2:42 in the morning. And it's always a solemn day around here, but it's good to see that we're not forgetting these folks on campus, and it continues to perpetuate year over year.
I cannot believe it's been 26 years.
Hard to believe.
So crazy.
Yeah, I was, 8 years old when that happened? That was big news even out in New Mexico when I'd heard it.
Oh, yeah.
Nationally televised, the whole shebang.
Yeah, that was over at my buddy's apartment when we got the news. It was a crazy day, man.
Oh, yeah. Definitely a crazy day. But I just wanted to highlight that before we got too far into the weeds of this particular podcast, because as I'm sure you all have noticed, they have been getting a little longer and longer as time goes, and I've got a feeling this one's not going to be very short either, considering how things shook out on Saturday.
Well, between that and then you think about, like, the coaching carousel is absolutely, like, heating up right now.
Oh, yeah. I got some, I have a couple of names that have been floating around. There was a little interview that took place today on one of the shows it's gonna irritate me. Pat McAfee had Lane Kiffin on discussing his situation. So it's been an interesting 24 hours, 48 hours on that front too.
But yeah, that was good. Well, and two things. One, like, a lot of what Kiffin said sounded kind of scripted, quite frankly.
Sure.
I was surprised he went on McAfee, to be honest. Like,
yeah.
You know, the stuff about him being in Gainesville 2 days ago, and then yesterday he was in Baton Rouge. Because you know that McAfee's not going to pull any punches.
No.
So I was surprised. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, no, me too. The moment they announced that, I was very, very, very intrigued on how that was going to shake out.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was surprised that, and I don't know that McAfee's, like, he's not going to be the guy that's going to, like, go after him and be, like, that kind of gotcha reporter.
No.
But you know, he's still gonna ask hard questions.
Yeah.
So I've gotten to where I really like that, the McAfee show, actually. When he first started coming around, I didn't know what to think of him, kind of thing.
Right.
I think part of it's just because we've been so conditioned with Lee Corso, and then, like, it could not be literally more opposite on the spectrum, right?
Yeah.
Like, young, vibrant guy that rips his shirt off, as opposed to this nice, sweet old grandpa who puts on a headgear.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, I think McAfee's been great, man.
Yeah, honestly, I've enjoyed his presence on game day. We've talked about that. I think there's times where it may have gone a little too far one way or the other, but I think largely overall I haven't had an issue with him being on the show. And I think it's brought a new energy. You see the crowd interaction's incredible. I mean, you didn't have that same level of crowd interaction previous, I don't think.
Well, what's funny is, so when I bought my truck, it was the first time, like, I'd ever had Sirius, streaming radio. And I actually kind of got into a habit of listening to Paul Feinbaum.
Yeah.
And then, you know, SEC Network comes around, and got to where I would, you know, if I was at home, I was watching Paul Feinbaum, and just kind of the shine wore off of that show for me. It was entertaining, but it's just ridiculous. And so I don't really. It's interesting because the only thing I found myself watching now is like SEC Now and College Football Final, and that's kind of it. Like I'll watch the pregame shit. Like I'll watch Game Day and SEC Nation on Saturday mornings, but I don't really watch SportsCenter or anything like that anymore. But I found myself actually going and watching Pat McAfee. I really enjoy his show. Like he's Pat McAfee, so he's a little bonkers, but I mean he brings on great guests. He asks great questions. Him and Josh Pate are probably the two people I listen to at this point. Feinbaum's just, I mean, it's a production is all it is.
It's production. The guests you bring on there, I mean, half the time you just want the guests, you want to hear the guests because you want to hear just how unhinged some individuals can become about their teams at times, of course. Makes it for some
The
entertainment.
callers just get to be too much for me, man.
They can be.
Yeah.
No, no question.
So, all
Okay.
right,
So
man.
I think we have postponed the inevitable too long. Let's dive into Saturday.
Oh boy. All right. The tale of two halves, obviously. I think what did Marcel Reed label this game? The unpuckering?
It's the unpuckering. It was. I know Josh Pate used that because those who do keep up with Josh Pate, one of the things he does is anytime there's a team that is highly ranked, about to be upset. He puts on what he calls the pucker meter. At points in the game, we were sitting at like a six, then we were like at an 8.5. At one point, he had us up as far as a 10. So basically, maximum pucker, which when you find yourself down four scores in a game at
Yeah.
halftime.
Yeah, at halftime. It's just completely bonkers. I don't even want to go through the first half, quite frankly. It was just poor football, kind of all the way around, quite frankly. I mean, give up an 80-yard. It was just bad. It's just bad football. You can sit here and analyze it all you want to, but here's my analysis of the first half. Dog crap.
So, looking at this game and looking at the numbers and everything else, I mean, just within the first half, what you have two interceptions. Probably should have been several more based on throws that were made, throws that were not made, dropped passes left and right, a backwards pass that leads immediately to a touchdown. One of the interceptions immediately turns around to an 80-yard pass. It's crazy to think that last minute of the half was so unbelievably devastating for A&M. Because if you take care of your business at the end of the half, you're driving down, you get a pick, you get into the red zone, you're feeling good. Kicking game falls apart, you miss two field goals, one of which doinks. And I mean,
That was
but you're still sitting at a point where you could make this a 10-point game right before the end of the half. But then you get picked, and then immediately goes that the other direction. Now it's 17 points. I mean, yeah, it's just.
a lot, but and I'm gonna say this, and you can believe me or not. I mean, I was disappointed, but
24.
part of it was, you know what, maybe it's just not our day. I
Yeah.
mean, it's only one loss. We still go 11-1. So it's just kind of one of those, it wasn't defeatist attitude. It was just, there's no reason for me to get like wound tight around the axle about this game if for some reason it's just kind of not our day. But in the other part of that though is in the back of your mind, you're going, it's always the halftime adjustments. I mean, maybe we can do this or if nothing else, just make this a respectable game. Shut them out in the second half and see what happens. Lean on the defense. But being down 27 points, you can't lean on the defense. You got to lean on both. Like, it's just got to be everywhere. All three phases have to execute when you're down by, like, basically, you spotted them a 27 point lead. Just because, and you're right, it could have been uglier, but it was just a poor, probably the worst half. Well, I don't think, obviously, not probably the worst half Texas A&M has played this year. Instead of it just being a bad quarter, they decided to make it a whole half, I guess, just to see if they could come back. I don't know, man.
It was very Jekyll and Hyde, right? I mean, you had about as piss poor of a half of football as you could possibly have. And then you turn around and you had a list of things that had to take place in this second half in order for you to get back in the game. But not only do you get back into the game, you go four straight drives with touchdowns. And all of a sudden, within 20 minutes of game time, you have a lead. Like, I don't think people understand. Like, yeah, we're talking about this wasn't like a last minute touchdown to like take the lead. It was a big deal. No, you took over the football game and had a lead with plenty of time to go. And on top of that, we'll get into this in a minute. You should have been up even higher than that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just and just like literally executing on both sides of the ball. Defense doing exactly what they absolutely had to do, right? Especially when you talk about, the ability to possibly even take a 38-30 lead and put the game away, and putting their butts on the line again, right? You're like handing it back to the defense and going, "All right, man, just like, gotta have one more," because all they had to do was kick a field goal, and Nick Harbor runs apparently like a 5-second 100-yard dash, like that dude. That dude can scoot. Like, I didn't know he was that fast. Like,
He gets good.
that's bonkers speed. I mean, he just left everybody in the dust. It was weird because he caught it and it didn't seem like it seemed like he was like a lumbering couple of steps and then just automatically it's like he hit the afterburner. So yeah, that dude can move. But it just to see that second half, I mean, Marcel throws for what 289 yards, 290 some odd yards in the second half. We only end up with 64 yards rushing, but I can't remember. I mean, we got sacked a handful of times, so I don't know how much of that was sacks. But if you looked, if before the game I told you we were going to rush for 64 yards and have four turnovers, at no point would you think we would be probably any team in the SEC.
No. Yeah, and there were a lot of questions to be asked as the game went along. I mean, you felt like maybe something like this was coming at points, where we weren't, we didn't necessarily put people away at certain times. Like I look back at that Auburn game, you give up that late score and all of a sudden, all right, what might take place here? But with this particular game, both sides stepped up, and you absolutely love to see that. You didn't rely on special teams at any point in the second half, not a single punt, not a field goal attempt. I mean, you just
Well,
moved the ball. And the crazy part was, this was all without turnovers in the second half, right? I mean, you had an interception in the first half, but this wasn't like some crazy barnstorming comeback where we had to get turnovers and we had to do that. No, it was just straight drives and stops. Drives and stops. That's what this game was in the second half. It was imposing your will.
you look back just kind of across our schedule, across the games, and this was really the first time where, because like we've had bad quarters, right? And we've said
Oh,
that
yeah.
a handful. Had bad quarters, and generally it was one side of the ball or the other, or maybe if it was both, but they weren't bad quarters that looked like they could put us away. This was a bad half on like in all three phases. As good as everything was in the second half is as bad as it was in the first half. I mean, I guess it could have been worse. Like you said, there's probably a couple picks in there that could have that maybe could have, should have, would have. But thank the Lord they didn't. But it was you like, but hearing the player interviews and them talking about, Torrey York and Dalton Brooks being at the top of the ramp, greeting guys into the locker room at halftime. Coach Elko going in there and goes in the locker room and he already has sees the players talking to their position groups and the leaders stepping up. Reed obviously, Torrey York doing that. Reed Adams doing it with the offensive line. Was it Concepcion doing it with the receivers? And this team, and so this again, though, starts going back to something that we talk about all the freaking time this year, right? We've been banging this drum, and it just, and quite frankly, we're right. Like, this is a culture within this team that plays for each other. It sounds like there weren't a whole lot of, heads hanging low in the locker room. It was just, all right, what do we got to do to win this game? Maybe it's that kind of dynamic and culture that you have within the program that allows them to go, you know what? All right, we're down 27 points. But we've got the whole second half left. If they scored 30 and a half, why can't we score 30 and a half? That's kind of your mentality. And it's a belief in each other and a belief in the system and a belief in everything that Mike Elko has installed in this program. And I mean, I would have loved to have been in the locker room. I can't wait for the polls. It's funny because he says, yeah, I didn't really say much. Well, I'm sure he said something.
I'm sure, yeah, I'm sure he said something, but I have a feeling that this was largely an internal fix. I think you're right there about that. You had everybody having their discussions, having the leaders step up where they need to, and just the mindset of, we know we can win this game. How do we figure out how to win this game? And you come out and you do what you got to do. And if you look at those first three drives each direction in the second half, critical drives. You go down, you're sitting at a 4th and 12. You opt to go for it. And Marcel avoids not one, but two potential tackles that ends this drive. Now, that doesn't end the game necessarily. You could still get a three and out and go back the other way, but man, that's a momentum move. You get that first down, proceed to move on, score a touchdown. And what does South Carolina do? They go back to right what they were doing at the end of the first half. They're moving the ball. They get down into the A&M territory. But that was one of a grand total of four plays South Carolina ran in our half of the field in the second half. You shut them down on that drive. That fourth and two, critical stop. You get the incredible catch from Bethel Roman after he dropped one on that same next drive. And I think after that catch, there was not just belief amongst the team, there was belief in the stands. There was belief on TV for everybody else. Oh my God, can A&M do this? Will
Yeah,
they do this?
and what's crazy to me is when you look at kind of again the tale of two halves kind of thing, the way South Carolina was able to move the ball in the first half, they looked like a competent football team, quite frankly. And we knew that they had talent. They just, I know the offensive line lost, or the offense in general lost, a handful of key players from last year to this year. Still have Sellers, though, and Sellers can kind of do it all. He's kind of the whole offense. But, I think we were expecting their offensive line maybe not to play that well. I mean, not the team, but like I didn't expect their offensive line to play that well in the first half. But whatever adjustments were made schematically, on defense, obviously paid off, right? Obviously paid off in the second half. And I'm still a firm believer that Tommy Moffitt is the reason our fourth quarters go the way they do. And why you can just eventually, and even though we didn't run, I mean, we ran the ball, what, 20, I mean, we ran the ball 29 times. The attempts were there, right? And
Sure.
what, Ruben Owens went for, gosh, 80 something? Where is it?
No. Reuben Owens did not go for 80. He went for 28 yards, my friend. Do you understand?
Oh, no.
We had
No,
60.
we rushed for 80 some odd, and then it was minus sex.
Let's say we ended up with 64 yards rushing over the course of the game. Reuben Owens said 28 of
Not
those.
69 yards.
EJ, EJ had 25. This was a game which, on that side of the ball, a little odd, right? Because South Carolina coming into this game was not a very good defensive front when it came to the run. They game planned for that, I think. It worked out on that front.
Well, I mean, if you watch any film in Texas A&M, you know that we like to wear people down. I mean, we tried to run the ball 29 times, but even that physicality, even if you're not successful, it's a beat down, right? Just constantly getting beat on. And then the explosive plays, and then yeah, what were like 2.2 yards per carry, something like that.
Yeah, not great.
Yeah, not great. But it's just, and at one point you gotta wonder when did the doubt start creeping in for South Carolina, right?
Right.
Was it that Bethel Roman catch?
Could have
And
been.
on t yeah, just on top of, I mean, even the play calling was bad in the first half, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But you have guys like Craver and Bethel Roman dropping balls, and they're just as sure-handed as they can be. It was just, if it could go bad, it did. Like if we'd had more time, we could have made more mistakes. Like that was the first half. That was the first half we played. But to turn around and basically flawlessly executed the second half. That's really what it comes down to. We don't punt and they don't score. That's pretty much flawless execution. Not to mention the biggest comeback in school history.
Yeah, in which I want to get into those numbers because I think you might find this fascinating. So Craver gets one catch for 6 yards. And if you looked at him moving around on the field, I think it was clear he probably didn't need to play in this game.
Yeah, I don't want him out there at Sanford at all.
No, he needs to get healthy. But what do you see on the other side? You see Isaiah Williams, a man who has not had one reception all season. Turn around, get three catches, one of which was a critical touchdown to kick off this whole shebang in the second half. He set the spark. Getting called upon when you're needed, and that's something that is so beautiful about this team. And that's why I love the fact that this game played out the way it did. I know some people are going to sit back and say, "Are you concerned about this?" And this will come into some questions that we have later. Are you concerned about what you saw in the first half of this game? It's like, I mean, how can you not be concerned about some of the play and some of the play calling and some of the execution? But what you also got out of this was a loss type game where you still get to learn lessons and grow and get key experience for guys that hadn't had a chance to do it. And you don't have the consequence of losing the game. Getting a guy like Isaiah Williams touches, he very well could be a factor in the coming weeks. That's so cool that we can see guys like that start stepping up and filling out spots across both sides of the ball. I hope we continue to see that.
Yeah, it's just he was so fun, and they it was Concepcion. They interviewed him after the game, and they were like, "What was your reaction to to Isaiah Williams catching that touchdown?" He's like, "Man, I almost cried." Like, again, that goes back to them like loving on each other and playing for each other. Obviously Concepcion led the group with 158 yards and 7 catches, but Bethel Roma with 4 for 139, which is a monster number. But Isaiah Williams, like you said, got a touchdown. Nate Borkature with a touchdown. And then you go to the rushing, and even though it wasn't successful, you got Ruben Owens with 8 carries, EJ Smith with 7, Marcel Reed with 7, Jamorio Mora with 4, and then Craver, with 1. But being able to spread it around the running back room as well, this is what we talked about, and the depth is so crucial. And we saw it last year, right after the South Carolina game, as a matter of fact, with Moss going down and what that did to our offense. And so, looking at how everything got spread around, knowing that Isaiah Williams, like of all people, okay, Isaiah Williams, sure. I mean, if he didn't have a name on the back of his jersey, I'd be like, I have no idea who that guy's is, like
Number
straight up.
zero, zero to hero, just like that.
So just spreading the ball around, and it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. I think Shane Beamer's a chode. Like that halftime interview was.
That one at the end of the first quarter.
There was the first quarter. I thought it was halftime.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, these guys.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, you seem to forget that, we beat these guys, with last year. And my first thought when he said that was, what does last year have anything to do with this right now?
Not a
Like, are
damn
you
thing.
jockeying to keep your job or something since Virginia Tech's getting taken away from you? Like, is that what's happening? And then he goes in the locker room and he's pumping his arms in front of his fans like they basically already won the football game. And I love it. I absolutely love it. I haven't watched his post-game press conference yet. That's kind of the like, did you?
I haven't yet. I need
Yeah,
to.
that's a grab some popcorn kind of thing, just so I can enjoy him just sitting there basically shell-shocked. But yeah, I just how fun, and I watched David Pollock, I think it was yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And he kind of said the same thing and answered it. He's like, I don't know that you're worried. I think you should be excited because now you have basically, another arrow in the quiver. Like you found yet another way that your team can be a championship team.
Well, and that was the thing I found fascinating. I went back and, just like you, we're checking out some of these things. I was on, I guess, the Tex-Ags reactions and listening to Billy on, I guess, Luchador on his podcast.
Oh, yeah.
He was saying that, hearing from Jackie Sherrill and hearing from some of these other big time coaches, like that's championship level football.
It
Finding
is.
ways to win in situations like that. It doesn't matter how great the opponent is. We understand what South Carolina was supposed to be preseason. I think this, this goes back to a couple of little stats I wanted to jump into. So did you see this graphic floating around about the AP top 25 preseason poll?
No, but you know what? I want to, yeah, go ahead.
All right. So A&M kicks off the year at number 19, right? On our schedule, we have now played number 15 preseason, number 13 preseason, number 9 preseason, number 6 preseason, and yet to have played number 1. You have beaten all 4 of those 5 so far. And I guarantee you, had you handed somebody this schedule at the beginning of the season and said, hey, A&M's going to play those teams, what are they going to say? Oh, A&M's going to lose that one. They're probably going to lose that one. That one's going to be a little tough for them. We'll see how they do. But the fact of the matter is, preseason rankings obviously don't dictate they're not preseason promises, right? You move into the season, you actually have to go out there and do the thing. Nobody preseason would have looked at that schedule and been like, man, A&M's got it easy.
Well, I heard this morning. I can't remember if it was Louie or if it was David, or I can't remember who it was or where I heard it. But preseason, and it might have been a crossover, my brain crossing like two people talking together. Preseason, we were picked to finish like eighth or ninth in the SEC, and we
Yeah,
beat
bam.
all these teams they predicted to be in front of us. But now they're going to go, oh, well, you haven't played anybody. What are you talking about? We beat all the people you said were going to be in front of us. We beat every team that you said that on our schedule that you said was going to finish better than us in the SEC. So which is it? Like, just pick a narrative.
Well, and also pick a narrative on the front of does A&M play teams that were going to fire their coaches, or was A&M part of the reason that they fired their coach?
Yep.
Like that's the other side of the coin.
Stanford's the only team that can say they fired their coach, but not because of A&M.
Right. So I'm gonna float something out here real quick. So there have been, I think this is from nine. This goes back to, all the way to, I think, to 1958. So A&M, their halftime deficits. Somebody had this listed out. So obviously, number one is the South Carolina game, 27 points down at the half. You come back to win it. Do you know what number two was?
As far as comebacks,
I'll give you a hint. I know you're in attendance because I was there too.
well, it can't be the Baylor game because that was a back and forth game. That wasn't a we fell behind game.
No. I'll give you a hint. It's a postseason game.
Oh yeah, Duke.
Duke in 2013, 21 points down, is our second highest comeback.
Yeah, I was thinking regular season, my
And
bad.
you were on the receiving end of that comeback, buddy.
Literally, yeah. I caught the guy that caught the pick six.
Yeah, Tony Hurd.
Little Tony.
Tony Hurd Jr., man. But now here's what's really funny. Do you know what the next one beyond that one was? It's interesting. I completely forgot about this game. It was 07 against Oklahoma State at home. We were down 17. We came back to win 24 to 23.
I remember that game. Yeah, I
Yeah.
remember that game.
I'd forgotten about that one.
Yeah, that was, I remember that.
Yeah, it kind of falls off from there, but that's just kind of a fun little.
Yeah, I was in recruiting.
Yeah. So that's really funny. So yeah, and then on top of all of this, just kind of lost in the news of the day, Elko got extended.
Man, and people have been asking me this for weeks, and like people are like, well, I don't know, man. I think he might go. I'm like, dude, I'm telling you. He's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere. All right. But I will say, like, real, like, true tip of the cap to Elko, like, making sure that the administration put in an incentive structure for his assistants as well. I mean, you want
Huge.
to talk about a dude that understands culture from the top down, not just for his players, right? Not just at practice, but literally from the top down of an organization to understand. And he said it, it's so much more than me, and it certainly isn't just me kind of thing. It's dude, how can you not love Elko, man?
He's the guy. I mean, we've said it from the beginning.
You gotta take care of the little people.
Well, it's funny because if you listen to, we talk about him a lot on the show, but looking back at Josh Pate, one of the things he said was anytime a coach is getting hired somewhere, yeah, he's excited about a coaching hire, but who are you bringing with you? You got to have the OC, you got to have the special teams guy, you have to have your DC, you got to have that O-line coach that's badass, you got to have that badass strength and conditioning coach. If you have all of those guys coming with you, that's going to be part of this big package deal. Like, that's awesome. I love the fact that Elko is going to get incentives for his guys. And now, if you're in a coordinator or a position coach here at A&M, and now you have incentives built in too,
Well,
brother.
and we'll go down a little bunny trail on this real quick. One, do you stay a little bit longer if the absolute right fit for you going from coordinator to head coach doesn't pop up? Like, you're like, why would I leave here? Because this isn't quite a good fit for me kind of thing, right? Like, it gives you pause as a coordinator, even as an assistant coach. Like,
Sure.
I mean, if that's not the right move for me, why would I leave here? And then
It's a
on top of
power
that, though, when those coordinators go other places and these assistants go other places, this is going to have a trickle-down effect across college football. Like, you still have to pay me the money I'm earned. We're not doing this fully incentive-based like LSU thought they were going to do it, like the governor
Yeah.
said he thought was going to happen, which we called out as being completely idiotic. But you just got to realize, man, we're in a different world. These are like this, the decimal point has been moved over a couple of places when it comes to how much money is involved in this and how much money we have. And if I go anywhere else after A&M and get a job, I'm telling them straight up, I want an incentive-based contract, just like what I just came from. Watch this have a trickle-down effect of what Mike Elko was able to put into effect. And I'm sure there are other coaches that have this in, but this is the first time I've ever seen it really, truly kind of put out to the world that, hey, this is an incentive-based contract as well. That we raise his base salary, but the incentive base, and then you go on that he did it for his assistants as well, which we haven't seen. And I don't think it's happened because if you ever did that as a head coach, why the hell wouldn't you want to put that out in the ether for get to get people to come work for you, right? It's
Right.
not all about money, and I understand that. But when you look at the fact that he put that in and it's real public knowledge now, right? That our assistants are on an incentive-based scale on top of their salary. Oh, and by the way, we're 10 and 0, right? So those two things together, why would you not want to work at Texas A&M? Why would you not want to work for Coach Elko?
Well, it's a massive PR move, and I think there was another something that came along that really kind of emphasized that for me. And it was looking at Reuben Owens, his father, one of his posts.
Oh yeah, he posted that. I can't remember if I reposted or not, but basically just said, when he talks about the development of his son and the culture of the program, I bet I can find it because somebody started a thread on Tex Eggs. I'll
It
find it.
was great, yeah.
Yeah, I'll find it here in a second, but just like it's amazing for that. I mean, like you said, like it's such great PR for A&M, right?
It is huge, massive. Yeah, Reuben Owens Sr. I got it right here.
Did you find it? Okay.
So Texas A&M and Coach Elko are shaping these young men to be great leaders on and off the field. In my 3 years of being an Aggie dad, this is the best culture I've seen. If you want your kids to play for a great coach, this is the place to be. Gig 'em 12th man A&M football. Now, there was a comment underneath this, just a quick little aside, because he did go out in the game. Cajun Ag asked, he said, praying Reuben is feeling okay from Saturday. Love this team and their fight. He said, he good. So apparently
Yeah.
he should be okay.
Well, and Elko mentioned that yesterday in his Monday press conference. Reuben's fine. Sounds like Mario's gonna be fine. But
Precautionary.
huh? Yeah, just precaution. Yeah, it was precautionary. Williams stepped out, so we didn't need to put him back in. Our running wasn't great anyway, so it didn't matter who we were running.
No,
Their
it became an
defensive
air
line,
out day.
I'll give South Carolina this, their defensive line's pretty impressive.
They played well.
Yeah, I'm not in charge, but man, if I were, both of those dudes be in street clothes on Saturday.
Yeah. Ooh,
I mean,
top. Oh.
you can't bench everybody, and you're never going to do that because it's an integrity of the game kind of thing. But I'd like to see, Marcel Reed be done halfway through the second quarter.
Yeah.
I'd like to see three or four quarterbacks. We should. Zeno needs to get in. He's a senior, right? Senior day.
Yeah, I ideally want to see this. So looking ahead to Samford, I think this game right here, this is your get right, get healthy game.
This
Get
is your
key
get right, get
experience
it healthy.
game.
Yeah, get right, get healthy, get everybody in the football game. Make sure your seniors play, kind of thing. And I'm not saying that in the sense of, man, I hope he does it. Dude, it's Elko. You know he's gonna do it, right? I mean, you absolutely know that he's gonna make sure he gets his seniors on the field here for Samford. It's a perfect game to do it. It's also the LA reunion weekend, so I'll be leading some yells before the game. Yeehaw.
So my fiance has a question as a sidebar. Since you're going to be receiving an invitation to the wedding, she was curious if you would lead the war hymn, considering you're the most qualified to do
I always get tagged for it, man. That's the life of being a former
it.
yell leader. You ever go to a wedding, you're pretty much leading the war hymn.
Well, there you go. Well,
Yeah,
make my heart happy.
I'm not sure it's optional. So
No, she told me you need to let him know he needs to do that. I'm like,
that
I'll
sounds
go
more
ahead
like,
and
yeah.
ask.
That sounds like that sounds more like the kind of text that I get from brides to be as opposed to a request.
Which is funny considering she's a T-sip, but that's fine. We love her anyway.
Well, she's come to the right side then.
She's at least understanding that.
Man, I was trying to post something the other day and I just couldn't get the wording right. If you're trying to make a joke and you just can't seem to land it, like I generally will just delete it. But my thought was, oh my gosh, what's his name? Glenn Powell, right? So Glenn Powell, if you don't know the story, Glenn Powell, well, I mean, I'm sure you know who Glenn Powell is. If you don't, he was in Top Gun. He's a heartthrob, whatever.
Everybody loves them. Twisters.
Yeah, Twister, another one. Yeah. So he's a diehard Sip, like diehard lifelong. He's from Texas, a huge Texas fan. And he's putting his money where his mouth is, and he's going to school to get his degree from Texas. So I will say kudos to that. But I wanted to post something about basically like, I'm not sure how the transfer portal works for Hollywood stars, but Glenn Powell, come on down, kind of thing. But yeah, so I thought that was a really neat story that he's actually going back to school. On the flip side of that, when you think about the most famous celebrities that are Sips, good old Minister of Culture showing us that good old culture at Texas football program, leaving the game 5 minutes early, 2%, 2% now.
Who would have guessed? What? Man.
I thought you were supposed to sing Texas Fight at the end of the game or whatever is song y'all sing. That's not.
Oh, we could definitely get into all those games. Man, I'll tell you what, this was for what was kind of an upset Saturday, and because it was for a few, but this was like a big weekend, and they were saying this ahead of time. This was a big weekend for the playoff in terms of
Big
like how
weekend for
people are
the,
going to fall.
yeah, there's a big weekend for the playoff because there were enough games that were like ours that you're like, I don't think they're going to lose, but boo, watch out, right? Like, don't overlook them. But if you think of it from an Aggies perspective, it was the most perfect day of college football ever by time slot.
No
Minus
question
the
about it.
first two quarters. Well, let's start maybe around 1 o'clock. But, Aggs have the literally biggest comeback victory in the history of the program. You get to flip it over and watch OU beat Bama. And then you get to flip it over and watch Georgia stomp on Texas. What else do you need, man? I mean, it was literally the perfect Saturday. It was the perfect Saturday to be an Aggie. It truly was, starting about 4 minutes into the third quarter.
About the only thing that would have made Saturday just a little sweeter would have been had Florida found a way to pull that one off against Ole Miss. It was this close.
You know what? Two results. Mississippi State would have been the other one.
Oh, yeah. Mississippi State, man.
Well, brutal.
You know, at some point, I mean, like, you don't feel sorry for the guys, but you feel empathetic towards them, right?
No,
Like,
I got empathy for him. My thing is,
Arkansas, man. They were this close to beating LSU.
well,
Oh, and six.
but let's think about this real quick though. Like, how bad is Mississippi State right now?
Mean, they're sitting at 5-6. I mean, they're right on the edge of bowl eligibility.
What are they in conference?
Oh, God, they're 1-6. They had the one win against Arkansas. Other than
Did beat
that,
Arkansas, that's right. That was
they've
the
been close. Like, they've almost been there, just like Arkansas's almost been there. And I think that calls back to what we've said about this league as a whole, is people are going to look at the bottom feeders of the SEC, teams at this point like Arkansas, who were sitting at 2-8, already out. But I mean, they're still out here scaring people.
And then that's the thing, and this is one thing I'll say, and I very rarely will you ever hear me give Arkansas any props. Mississippi State again, I mean, we're in the SEC, and now we're just better than them perennially. It's just what it is. But so Mississippi State still has a little bit to play for, right? They've got a bowl game on the line, so they've got bowl eligibility out there. Now they got to beat Ole Miss, so I'm not sure I see that happening. But they're out there.
But
And you look at the results from last week, and you look just kind of across the board, they're still in it. Like, they're still trying, is what I'm saying. Like, the players
okay.
haven't quit on Coach Levy, and the players haven't quit on Petrino. And Petrino might be the better example because they've got nothing to play for, like, literally nothing. But you know what I think he can do? Like, they might give up on the last game. I don't know what Arkansas's last game is, but I know
Mizzou.
that this weekend is Texas.
It's Mizzou
Yeah, they
is
might
what.
give up by the time they get Mizzou because there's no history between them. Like, it's just whatever, right? Between Arkansas and Mizzou. But Arkansas, Texas, he's got one more game that I think Petrino could get him up for. I'm not saying that they're going to win by any means, but man, they're still playing hard, right? I mean, 1 point.
Well, and that's a tough game
Is that
for
in Fayetteville
Texas.
or is it home?
That's a tough game for Texas because it's in Austin, which has been their safe space. They have played very well in Austin. They feel really good about playing in Austin. When they've gone out, I mean, yeah, what, their three losses have all been on the road. They have done well at home. But you are coming off of what was an emotionally draining game and a loss against Georgia. You weren't able to get that monkey off the back. And now you're maybe kind of peeking ahead a little bit because you're looking at A&M, knowing how critical that game is for your extremely outside playoff chances. Because I've heard from multiple different people like how they kind of view Texas. We know that helmet bias is a real thing when it comes to these committees. So if you have a Texas team that steamrolls Arkansas and then beats A&M, does Texas have an outside shot at the playoff? I'll say an outside shot. I don't think they have a realistic shot.
No.
But it wouldn't shock me to see the committee look at that and go, well, Texas is kind of playing their best football right now, and they really showed up against A&M. But if you lose to Arkansas, it's a completely moot point.
Yeah, well, just and add in one more thing to this is that all this crap floating around about Sark right now.
Oh,
Like,
yeah.
Desmond Howard came out and dropped a video bomb, basically. And because of, if you think about the kind of clout that Desmond Howard has, right? And then you add in the fact that him and Kiffin and Sark, I believe all three of them, same agency, right? Same agent, same sports agency. So he's not just going to like rip off something, without it probably clearing the tower, making sure that he's not stepping on somebody's toes. But so now you've got all this uncertainty about Sarkisian's future, and some of the rumors coming out about what's going on over there are completely out of control. And if he goes win-win to, if he beats Arkansas and he beats us, he'll probably just quietly exit and they'll be fine. But man, if he loses, you know how they are. Like, they will absolutely go scorched earth, and what they may end up doing, honestly, is setting themselves back yet again by putting themselves in the middle of a coaching carousel that is more like a coaching madhouse this year. I want to get into that a little bit later, but to put yourself in a situation where, I mean, look at the jobs that are still open. Are you actually the most attractive? I mean, because if all this comes out, and some more stuff that comes out about exactly what goes on behind the scenes with Texas football program, at least the stuff that I'm hearing from, I mean, moderately at least reputable sources. I mean, if all this comes out, who's going to want to coach there? All of a sudden, that logo on the side of the helmet doesn't matter as much when you know that you have donors completely meddling in everything.
Well, and you're
But
seeing that. Well, you're seeing that with
I mean,
LSU too, and you're seeing that with LSU as well. I mean, you're seeing that.
they're getting meddled up to a state level. That's just, LSU is just absolutely bonkers, which is crazy because if you ask me, like, if that hadn't happened and they just fired Kelly, right? If they just been like normal people and fired their coach and paid him and sent him on his way, none of this would have happened. So if they had done that, I would tell you right now that LSU is probably more attractive job than Texas.
I'd agree.
But because they went complete moron and like the governor stepped in, if I never hear him speak another day in my life, it'd be too soon.
Chaos.
And so now I mean, you look at the LSU job, and you're like, bro, how many levels of people and interference am I gonna have to deal with? Right. And I understand, and at one point I put it out, I don't know why the governor's involved, but I get it. Just because when it comes to regents and they've got their hands in, in some stuff. And then on top of that, it's Louisiana and it's a corrupt as crap. So they probably got their hands in stuff that they shouldn't have their hands in to begin with. So before that, though, I mean, I think LSU possibly would have been the more attractive job, especially knowing that Texas might still be tied to Arch next year. Like, no thanks, man. I've seen that dude play.
Well, and that's the other side of the coin to ask. And fiance didn't want to hear this side, but let's say Sark does leave. Does Arch leave?
Well, I think it gives Arch a window to transfer. I think it does, and I think he'll consider it.
You are in, if he does leave, do you know where I think he may go? He may follow Lane Kiffin somewhere. Because if we're talking about a quarterback guy, I mean, come on. He has a guy who's a D2 quarterback that's out here actively being very competitive. Do you don't think he can do something with Arch?
I think Arch should go wherever Jimbo goes.
If Jimbo comes back, but that's not the craziest thought about this entire situation. But if it, all right, hypothetical, if Jimbo Fisher were to come back, where do you think he goes?
Well, so here's we'll call it the notable Power Four openings, right? Because I'm not looking at anything outside of the Power Four
Yeah,
conferences.
go ahead.
So we got LSU, Penn State, Florida, Virginia Tech is no longer open now, right?
Yeah, James Franklin took that one, and I think that's a huge hire for Virginia Tech.
A huge hire for Virginia Tech. I mean, obviously a downgrade for James Franklin, but it'll be interesting to see if he can get them back to the old, Frank Beamer days, right? Was it Frank?
Yeah.
Fred? Frank. Frank.
Franklin.
Yeah.
Well, and because Virginia Tech, I mean, they do have history. And if you know anything about Virginia as a state, it is a talent-rich state. He could absolutely take over in that state. Penn State was recruiting Virginia ahead of time. Ohio
Yeah, I mean,
State does.
he's still in the same recruiting grounds, basically. I mean, it really hadn't changed much for him. So that'll be interesting to keep an eye on. But then you also have Stanford, UCLA, Oklahoma State, Arkansas, and Oregon State. Then, I mean, they're not Power Four, but
Auburn.
and oh yeah, excuse me, Auburn, half the SEC, basically.
And
So
if you
it's.
threw Texas in there,
Well, yeah, and so add Texas to that, and then think about all the coaches that just haven't been fired yet.
which there will be a few, I'm sure.
There will be more let go. Absolutely.
Florida State is going to be
Or
open.
excuse me, Florida State is absolutely top of that list. Were you and I having this conversation? No, I think it was yesterday with my buddy. Is there going to be a school? Oh, you're my buddy too.
Thanks,
My
man.
one of my other buddies. Is there going to be a school that's like a Power Four school that sits there and goes, man, we kind of like to make a move this year, but look at how many big hitter players are out there. Can we just suck up one more year? Like,
I
are they
think.
going to fire Norvell? Are they going to be like, do we really want to get into this right now? I mean, I could see an administration thinking like that. Like, hey, you know what? It'll be less on the buyout. It'll be one more year. Maybe we'll try and give them a little bit more NIL, see if we can salvage something for the next coach. And
Right.
I know that the rule of thumb is, the best time to fire a bad coach is yesterday, right?
Right.
But it doesn't get any better with age. But you look at the schools that are out there. But I was kind of shocked that James Franklin went to Virginia Tech. I thought he'd end up like a little bit bigger name school, because right now Virginia Tech isn't the program that Beamer had it, had it humming at the level that Beamer had it humming at. But I think maybe it's that he understands opportunity. I mean, could Michigan come open? Right? I mean, there's.
Let me drop something here real quick because apparently, a little birdie who has friends in certain athletic departments, namely Louisiana, told me that there is a couple of names that have not really been floated too much that apparently LSU is actively pushing for. One of which would be a poach, which would be very interesting.
Really?
Josh Heupel, Tennessee.
Really?
Apparently, that name's been getting floated around it a bit. They're thinking that that might be a nice
That's not the
snag.
worst fit. I don't hate that.
No. And then the other one, which I'm not sure how much of a fit this would be, but it would still be a very interesting move. Cliff Kingsbury are apparently the two names that are getting floated around by LSU that aren't necessarily on most of the hot boards.
I don't know that
But
I can see Cliff at LSU.
I don't agree with that one either. But Heupel, that's got a little bit of movement
Well,
in my head.
the two names for me when it comes to probably a little under the radar. I don't know if they're specifically under the radar. They're just not as talked about. And you and I have talked about this a million times. Summerall
Oh,
from
yeah.
Tulane. There's no way he's at Tulane next year. And you said you texted me this yesterday. Like, I can't believe Auburn hadn't swiped him up.
I
Like,
can't.
that makes some of the most sense on the planet. Like, if he can have success at Tulane, which means he's recruiting LSU. I mean, you're moving a couple states over, and you're playing for a much, much bigger brand.
Well, and Alex Golish over there, South Florida, he's going to get a pretty healthy look.
Yeah,
Maybe.
that'll be interesting because USF has money. So it'll be interesting if they can keep him. And then another one for me is Hartline out of Ohio State, the OC.
Yeah.
Would shock me to see him, especially if Ohio State either wins the national championship or plays in the game. Or honestly, I could see him going regardless.
Well, and Eric Morris, North Texas.
Yep, it's another good one.
I mean, you want to talk about a team that just kind of snuck into this conversation, in my opinion? I mean, I kind of wrote them off after they lost to South Florida. But since that game, they've just done nothing but improve and get better while South Florida's regressed. Memphis already lost out again, so they're out of the conversation. I mean, it's absolute chaos out there right now. Yeah, I don't know what to think on that front from the
Here's
group of five.
another poach, Drinkwitz.
Yeah, I mean,
We didn't
and
talk
the
about him yet.
No, and the thing is, like, he was floated around as an option for Florida, which I didn't hate either. Like, I think he's a good second option, maybe behind Kiffin if they don't get him.
I think the best fit for Drinkwitz, honestly, is Penn State.
I could see that too.
I think that's the best fit for him. And you're just running out of coaches, though, man.
You are and you aren't, because there are a lot of names that
Oh,
aren't
there are
going to get
a lot of names
floated
out there.
around.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact is, there's probably a lot of OCs out there that are probably going to get a pretty healthy look. There's going to be plenty of group of five guys that are pretty gritty that are going to get a look. Obviously, all these top competitive ones will be. But, all I know for sure is that, yeah, that little map that Texas always puts up is going to look like a damn spaghetti. Just do, 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 all the different lines running around. Meanwhile, A&M went ahead and locked up the ship. I loved what Emily of East Texas put out on Twitter. This made me really chuckle.
She's a
She
great follow.
she's a great follow if you don't. And she said, A&M locking down Elko felt like us hopping on the last chopper out of Nam.
Dude, well, and that was the thing. I was never worried. I always thought Elko was going to stay. I really did.
Yeah, me too.
And it's just that he stayed and got his assistants, potential pay bumps is so it's just again great PR move, man.
I mean, everything about this. All I'm going to say is I am just so thrilled that we are on the outside of this particular issue. You have done the things that you need to do.
Officially,
Officially.
officially.
Officially, you are outside of the issues. You have locked down your coach of the future. You have locked down probably a lot of those assistants as well. And all the while, you have the built-up NIL funds. You have the facilities. You have the pedigree. You have everything lined up for you to be extremely successful over the next several seasons if you continue to capitalize on in the right way.
Right.
I mean, you know, say what you want about that South Carolina game one way or the other, but my God, I found it to be a bit of a confidence booster because once again, you found another way to win in a season where you have had to find multiple ways to win, and they're winners.
All right. Shall we get into the picks?
Let's get into our picks. How did we look last week?
You sucked. I sucked slightly less. You went 2-3, and I went 3-2.
Okay.
We only picked one different.
Right.
So the only one we got, so we both missed on Bama, we both missed on Duke. UVA coach. There's another one that might end up getting poached.
Yeah.
We both got Ogur right. We both got the Ags right. Where we were different is I picked Clemson to go into Louisville and win, and you picked Louisville. So I got Clemson on that one. So I'm 35-27. You are 34-28. So technically, in theory, if you were just gambling on these games straight up, we would be making you money.
I do it. But once again, don't listen to us. We're just out here having a good time.
Yes. That said, we are not responsible, nor are we liable for any gambling you make based off the awful picks that we make.
I will say I'm laughing my butt off because I just pulled up next week's games and I'm looking at Alabama. They're playing Eastern Illinois. Eastern
Dude,
Illinois's logo looks like FCS East, like Midwest East. Just that's what the logo looks like. It looks like a AI generated video game
gross.
logo for that college.
Gross.
That's funny.
Yeah, I mean, this is an absolutely terrible slate this week.
But it was always going to be because half of the S, well, over half of the SEC is playing nobody
Yeah.
every year, and I have to listen to the same people
But
talk about the scheduling every year.
I did find some tight lines though. There's a couple good games out there this week. And I'm gonna start with Missouri going on the road to number 11 Oklahoma. Oklahoma's a 7.5 point favorite. I picked this one because I'm like, Drinkwitz, he's not going to let his teams quit. He's got a good culture there. OU coming off an emotional win against Alabama.
Yeah.
Is this a trap game for OU?
Yes, I think it is. Looking at Mizzou, I mean, you're coming off of what was a pretty poor performance against A&M, but you get your feet back under you. And in similar circumstances, you trounce Mississippi State. And that's always a nice confidence boost going into what is a rivalry game
Yeah,
historically.
it's the old Big Eight kind of
Big
world.
8, Big 12. I mean, the amount of times, I mean, they played each other a couple times, I think, in the Big 12 title game. There have been some really good matchups between Mizzou and Oklahoma.
Well, and Mizzou is 7-3. They're not technically out of it yet. They're fighting for their playoff lives. Can they beat an Oklahoma? I'm gonna tell you right now, I'm gonna take Missouri to win this game.
I'm with you, actually, believe it or not. Oklahoma. Yeah, I think Oklahoma, let's look at their two big wins, right? Their two big wins so far on the year on the road in both of these games against Tennessee and Alabama. Statistically, they should not have won these games. They were
Yeah.
outgained. They were out, you know, I mean, they were out,
They were
you know,
out footballed.
they were out footballed in every stat except for like turnovers, which they
Points.
are.
Like every snap of points,
About to say
basically.
every yeah, points and turnovers have been like the two things that have helped them out. I mean, and yeah, you see it in that Alabama game. Pick six goes back for a touchdown. I don't foresee Mizzou making those similar mistakes, and I think Oklahoma relies on those.
Yeah, I'm taking Missouri. They're a disciplined team.
They are.
This game this week is like us in South Carolina last week in the sense that unranked against ranked at home. Oklahoma's riding a high. We're riding the unbeaten high. Oklahoma's riding the Alabama high. But Mizzou won't make the same mistake South Carolina did in the second half. I think they win. I think it's crazy, but I think they win.
I think they win too. They're still down starting quarterback, but I honestly think the kid, I think he got his feet under him in that Mississippi State game, and he's feeling a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, and they talked about it's not like he was never getting snaps during practice throughout the year as well.
And
So
if you look at the standings, I mean, they're right next to each other. Like
yeah.
this game's a lot closer than I think. I mean, we're talking the
Well, they beat
Lions.
up. Yeah.
Yeah, the line opened at 9.5. It's already fallen to 7.5.
It'd probably be 6.5 or 5.5 by the time kick.
It might be. I wouldn't be shocked to see Mizzou win.
Yep. All right. So now we got 2-7-3 teams. Number 20, Louisville on the road at SMU. Louisville's coming off that 1-point loss to Clemson. I'm on SMU. I'm not sure who they just played. But the Pony Express is, oh, excuse me, the Pony Express is 7-3. Let's see. They played 10
Boston
days.
College. They played Boston College last after having an overtime win against Miami. They went on the road to BC and absolutely smoked their cheese.
Yeah, so they were on a bye week last week.
Right.
SMU getting a bye week. They're at home 3.5. Louisville coming off a heartbreaking loss at home to Clemson.
In a previous loss to Cal before that.
I think Vegas is right on this one. I'm taking SMU.
Yeah. No, I'm leaning SMU. I mean, I think home game coming off the bye week, you're feeling confident. Louisville's gonna have some fight in them, I've no doubt.
Yeah, I
But
mean, they're 7-3. They still got plenty to play for, and especially within the ACC, that conference is still a toss-up, I think.
yep, but ponies.
Yep.
Ponies have
All right,
done very
one
well
more
in this
time.
conference.
Let's
But
see
they
here. Next
don't.
one. What's up?
Yeah, I would say ponies have done very well in this conference, and they don't back down from the big teams.
No, they'll be tough, and they're not a bad team. They're 7-3.
No.
Next one I've got number 22 Pitt at number 16 Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's a 2.5 point favorite at home. 20, see Pitt. Boy, we were dumb on that one. Watch Pitt, keep it close. Watch Pitt. I'm a moron, dude. Notre Dame just throttled Pitt.
Trounced them.
So
Georgia
I.
Tech is in a goofy spot because they have been playing with some serious fire over the last several weeks. I mean, they lose that NC State game in fairly convincing fashion. But I mean, if you look at some of their previous games, even including that Boston College game back on the 15th, I mean, Georgia Tech has had to scoot by, and they've had some officiating help and some other things in some of these games. Wouldn't shock me to see Pitt maybe come back. Kind of shake off that Notre Dame game because I still think they're a good team. I just don't think they're elite.
Yeah. So you're going to take Pitt?
I'll take Pitt.
Yeah. I'm going to take the Fighting Haynes Kings.
You know what? And the thing is, I love Georgia Tech, but I foresee that the ACC is going to get weirder before it gets cleaner.
That's fair. All
Yeah.
right. Next game. We're not picking the Aggies this week, by the way. I
That's fine.
mean, I guess normally there's not even a spread for the game, so we can't. Because normally, like these bad ones, we pick the spread, right?
Yeah,
There is
but
literally, there's no spread. It's so bad. It's so lopsided.
well, I mean, they're sitting at, you're talking about 1-10 Samford.
Yeah.
And their one win was by 2 points against VMI.
Yeah.
They lost to
All
Baylor
right.
42-7.
Yeah. All right. So I got 23 Tennessee going on the road to the swamp. Florida, Tennessee's 4.5 point favorite on the road. Straight up for absolutely no reason. I'm going to take Florida. I
Yeah.
like them at home. That's my reasoning.
Yeah.
I think Florida still got some fight in them.
Florida.
Tennessee absolutely has to have this game.
So, yeah, I think Tennessee has to have this game. And, weirdly enough, I hate to have to say this about Florida, but I think Tennessee might be looking ahead to Vanderbilt a little bit, which is kind of ironic. They might be. You're going to overlook the Gators towards your big in-state rival, the Vanderbilt Commodores. But the reality is, that's just what college football is this year. So, I mean, Florida, you're on a three-game skid. You play Georgia tight, lose the game. You just gave up against Kentucky. You didn't even fight. But then you found your feet again, decided you were going to fight against Ole Miss. I think you're playing for pride at this point, but I think Florida's pretty proud. Give me the Gators.
Yeah, well, and look, like you look at Tennessee, and obviously, their record's not bad by any means, but like you look at their games this year and they're scoring points, right?
But that's all they can do.
But they gave up 26 to Syracuse. They gave up 44 to Georgia. They gave up 24 to UAB, 34 to Mississippi State, 31 to Arkansas, 37 to Bama, 34 to Kentucky, 33 to OU. You're sitting at 7-3, you're fighting for your playoff life, but man, you can't play defense.
And Florida has
The
shown
question is,
spurts.
can Florida keep up offensively? And like if I'm basically betting on getting good DJ Lagway.
Which at home, I trust that a little more.
Yeah, so you're gonna take.
Gator chomp.
All right.
Blow
And then the
route.
last one, this is kind of one of those. I just picked a tight line. I don't think either of us know a ton about these teams. We got another number 12 BYU on the road at number 25 Cincinnati. The line is 2.5 for BYU. I have seen BYU play, and I think I've seen some Cincy highlights. This is a pick'em. Well, not quite a pick'em game. They're saying BYU's the better team, not by much, but better team.
Well, and BYU, once again, kind of in a goofy little spot, right? I mean, you're coming off of what was a trouncing. It was an ugly game. You lose to Texas Tech. You turn around and you get your feet back under you against TCU, so you're feeling a little better. But now you're going on the road, going to the East to go play at Cincinnati, who's on a two-game losing skid, largely outside of the chance to make the Big 12 title game at this point. But I think Cincinnati still has a lot to play for in terms of pride, just like I was saying with Florida and other teams. BYU, man, it's just I just don't think they're that good of a football team.
When they played somebody good, they got the tar beat out of them.
Yeah, I don't think they're that good of a football team, and I think Cincinnati's not a bad team. It's at home. Cincinnati's gonna be fired up for it. Bearcats.
All right. I'm going to take the Storm and Mormons.
All right, go all right. There you go. We got a couple of points of divergence this week.
Yes. All right.
Yeah, so yeah, we're not just picking each other's picks because that would be boring all the time. But we're gonna have fun with it though.
All right, I got that's about a wrap, man.
Yeah, we got a few questions.
Oh yeah.
We do have a few questions. I'll go to Instagram first because I know we had a good one in here. Oh, it switched over my accounts again. Love when that happens. Like, just let me see it. Okay, here we go. So, okay, from Dr. Chad E. Nelson.
Oh, Dr. Chad, what's up, dog?
He's got something for you.
Nerd.
Looking ahead, assuming we beat the hell out of TU, who would you prefer to play in Atlanta? Who's our best matchup? Hi, Roy.
Hi, Chad.
Because in reality, you're looking at three teams. You're looking at Ole Miss, you're looking at Georgia. You're looking at Alabama.
Probably rather play Bama of all three. I know that's crazy to say, but Bama's not very good at running the football. And if we can key in on Ty Simpson, I like our chances. Georgia can run the damn ball.
I would say of the three that I don't want to play, I think Georgia's playing the best ball right now. I
Yeah. No,
think of the three.
I would not want Georgia at all. I wouldn't mind Ole Miss, but of the three right now, I think I'd probably take Alabama just because they're just not running the ball like Alabama normally does. They don't have like that running back that's going to be in the NFL kind of guy. I mean, I'm sure they will be, but not like go be a star kind of guy. And we're just so used to seeing that out of Alabama for so many years with Nick Saban. So it's just, yeah. I mean, I'd probably take Alabama would be the one I'd want to face.
If I had to rank the three, I would say probably Alabama number one. I'm with you. I think that's probably our best matchup. I would say number two, Ole Miss.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because they've got offense, but if you can keep up with them, which I think our offense is more than capable of doing so if they do it right. It probably turns into a bit of a track meet, but I think we win that game. Georgia by far and away would be the toughest matchup for us. And if you look at a lot of the power ratings this week, a lot of people have elevated Georgia above us from this past game, which, I mean, based on the overall from the game, fair. You to look at A&M's first half and go, okay, well, if that Aggie team shows up against Georgia, they're getting smoked.
Well, and it's
But
definitely but if that, well, I know it's not the only thing, but there's definitely one thing that Kirby Smart took from Nick Saban is that you're playing your best football in November.
right.
And that's what Georgia does, just like the Nick Saban Bama, fans, it's programs and teams did. Like Georgia just gets better over the course of a year. What's interesting is We kind of look like that a little bit too right now, but
Right
we've
now,
had
yeah.
first half, but it's just, I think ours is just momentum of staying undefeated, whereas Georgia actually looks like they're getting a little bit better.
I really do think that they are improving week over week, and so that's a team I don't want to see. We very well may see them down the road, but a team to keep an eye on for sure. But yeah, I would say in answer to your question, Alabama for sure. Matt Trujillo sent me a text. He
What's up, man?
asks, yeah, he says, while we can all appreciate the level of halftime adjustments made week in and week out, are you concerned about the consistent need for major adjustments at halftime as we move into postseason play? Can we get away with things against SC and LSU that we won't be able to get away with against better teams?
I mean, there's always adjustments at the halftime, right? And I think the South Carolina game was the first time that it really felt like it had to be this major adjustment, right? Because it
Right.
was adjusting everything that we had done on both sides. Well, all three phases, right? It's just we had to change everything. I'm encouraged. This is another one of those things where it's kind of the same attitude kind of thing in the South Carolina. I'm encouraged that we are able to make adjustments on a regular basis and come out and really put our foot on people's throats the second half. We're just barely ahead or just barely behind, and we end up winning comfortably, kind of thing. I mean, I don't want to see that against a team that'll truly take advantage of it, but it can't get much worse than South Carolina.
Well,
So,
and yeah,
like
what I
we've
was,
kind of shown.
yeah, my thought process on that was, you go into the mindset that these guys have now experienced this, and maybe they have it in their head of, let's not put ourselves in that position again. You know, like, if you're seeing things trending poorly in the first half, do everything in your power to make preventative measures to get to halftime. Make it reasonable and then go out there and do what you need to do in the second half. You know, if you're down 10 points or two touchdowns,
I don't think there's any Aggie right now that would go, "Oh no, it's over."
right, exactly. And so that's where you need to keep the game. Like, if you're going to be losing at the half against teams,
Keep it within reach.
keep it within reach. You know, don't put yourself down 27 points at the half. You know,
Well, I don't
keep.
know. Apparently 27 is in reach. 28 is too much.
28 might be a little too much, but I mean, especially if you're making cute play calls down by the goal line, Colin Klein, but that's okay. You know, fact is, you have now proved that you can do it. And if anything, if I'm one of these opposing coaches, yeah, you look at that first half, but you go, I doubt we see that from A&M again.
I do understand the question. Like, yeah,
Me too.
there would be concern if we were consistently down 20 to 25 points every game of the half, and like we were just like the second half warriors all year long. But I think what we've seen is we're second half warriors, but we're able to keep things within reason in the first half when things aren't going our way.
Right.
So yeah, better teams will capitalize, but I don't think you could find a worse half of football than we just played. But the problem is, and this I will agree with Matt, you do that to Georgia, you ain't coming back 27 points on Georgia. Like, that's not happening. So it's a concern. If we were to replicate South Carolina in the playoffs, that is an absolute concern. I think we could replicate that against Texas and be okay, but
Potentially.
I don't want to.
No,
But
I think.
the Ohio States of the world, the Alabamas, the Georgias, they are not going to let you get away with that.
So yeah, put yourself in a reasonable position to make your adjustments.
You lose by less at half.
Lose, yeah, be losing by less at half, or just don't be losing at the half. I mean, look at what happened in the Mizzou game. You know, you played a slow half of football, but you're up two touchdowns. And what do you do right out of the gate on the other side of it? And mind you, this is a better team than South Carolina. On the road, what do? You go back out there and you immediately punch them in the mouth again. You then give them a little bit of momentum back and immediately strip it away. You have a lot in your bag right now. You
Yeah,
do.
and what you got from Saturday was a killer mentality.
Yes, you did. You acquired it. It was an addition.
You earned it. I mean, you
Yeah.
earned a championship mentality on Saturday.
Yeah, and that's been the consensus amongst everybody I've seen, all the big talking heads, with the key exception being Brandon Walker, and we don't talk about him because he's completely
A child.
just disconnected from reality.
Well, he's just. He's letting his emotion and his fandom just sneak in a little bit too much. And we were talking, we weren't recording yet, were we? Like he's like
No.
a cert. You said he was a certified hater, like straight up, he's a true hater. And I don't think that he hates Texas A&M necessarily, but now that Casey Smith is there, I think it drives him absolutely up the wall that we're in the SEC and now we're better than Mississippi State.
Well, he hates it because it's Casey Smith by proxy. I think it's a combo. And then just, I don't like her, and I certainly can't like her team that she supports because she uses that against me. I can't have that. So, my one message to him is get good, scrub. That's all there is to it. Get good. You know what I think? I think that Texas game broke him.
It's possible.
I think that Texas game broke him. I mean, if you saw him running around, I mean, even the Mississippi State fans on the sideline that were seeing him running around were like, this guy. Like that is, we talk about, I mean, we were just talking about it earlier on this podcast, celebrities from schools. The fact that that is your celebrity is extremely sad. Go find somebody else, anybody
Oh,
else.
man.
Will Ferrell, maybe.
There's a dude that he does. I wish I could remember his name. He does a podcast for the longest time, Stingray. So he was for a long
Stingray.
time he was a caller.
Oh, I miss Stingray.
Yeah, and now he's got like a legitimate podcast now. But he did. So I think Stingray is the weird one. Like he went to Alabama, but he's a like he went to Alabama for meteorology, but he's a Mississippi State fan because they didn't have the program like the degree he wanted to get. So he went to school to Alabama, but he's a lifelong dog.
Yeah, which is just such an interesting dynamic, but a dynamic I appreciate because at least somebody has that.
I applaud the backbone.
I do because, I mean, at the end of the day, you could have completely thrown away your young fandom and been like, all right, I'm going to support what is a dominant, amazing football team. But he continues to support his team. But on that exact same token, if you're attending a school, like, support the teams, man, at least while you're there.
Well, I mean, he's not there anymore, so, you know.
Exactly. I mean, he's been gone for a long time, so that's not a big deal. But that's just something to keep in mind. Oh boy, what a day, what a podcast, and what a weekend we're up for. I am pumped. I get to go to the game.
Nice.
Yep, it's going to be Alex's first time at Kyle Field, so we get to
Nice.
expose her to the chaos.
It'll be one of the most chaotic 11 a.m. like out of conference. Like, are they even Division One? They are, right?
They're FCS.
Oh, they are. Yeah. See, like this, like the worst opponent,
That's why there's no line.
the worst opponent in the worst time slot, and it's gonna be a madhouse, and it's senior day.
But senior day, you're gonna have 100,000 plus in the building again. I mean, I'm looking at the ticket prices. They've come down a little bit, but even so, that the
What's
place
the
is
get
gonna
in?
be
Like,
it's gonna be
what's
full.
get in? Like 80, 100 bucks?
Yeah, I think the cheapest I saw was like $95 right now. So,
That's a
I
lot of
mean,
money for Samford.
it is a lot of money for Sanford. I have paid to watch A&M play nobodies in November, and I've paid upwards of $25 to $30 to see A&M play a football game at Kyle Field.
Not this year, buddy.
No, you're talking three times the price because this is much watch football for people.
And it's the last one at Kyle because, I mean, basically we go, well, I mean, there's a
You say
scenario where,
this.
yeah, there's a scenario where it might not be, but I mean, for all intents and purposes, if this team does what we think they're capable of doing, this
This
will
is
be
the
the
last
last
time I see him.
Kyle in 2025.
Yep. And
So it'll be a madhouse. I'll be out before the game. All the old Yell leaders get out on Kyle Field. It's reunion weekend. So
yeah, we'll be out there. It'll be a good time. I'm excited. I'm just glad to get back at the field.
I'll wave to you.
I'll wave. He said, I'll come walking by because I know where that tailgate's at. I'll be like, hey guys. Hi, friends. So yeah. All great and good. No complaints. We're alive for another week.
Yep, beautiful. Actually, good weather on the way. We got some rain on the way, so I'm excited about that, honestly.
Yes, rain on the way next this weekend, going into next week. There's a second system coming behind, and we'll talk about it a little bit because it'll be Thanksgiving week. But keep in mind, if you are traveling for Thanksgiving next week, there is another system on the way. So we'll just have to keep an eye on it, see what's supposed to be happening with that. But we will monitor it. Band boys are still off until after Thanksgiving. We'll be up in Bonham, Texas, playing at a. It's a Toys for Tots drive up there,
Oh, that's awesome.
so that'll be a good deal. I like doing those type of gigs because, there's always a lot of thanks and a lot of appreciation. And on top of
Right.
that, we're the last band of the day. I mean, John Wolfe's playing ahead of us, but I think there was some strategy there. Play John Wolfe earlier to get the older crowd excited, and then work
Yeah.
kind of afterwards for the kids. So,
Yeah.
it's one of those deals, but I'm excited to get out there and play and rock and roll, do what we do.
Yeah, that'll be great.
I'm excited. It'll be a lot of
Yeah, I'm
fun.
a realtor, so basically I've got this week left, but next week I pretty much take the whole week off. But we will be recording next week
Yes.
since the Tuesdays. So we'll be able to record before the SIP game. Excited to see Aggie volleyball in the tournament.
Yep,
They
number two seed.
I believe they play Sunday at 4 p.m. So check them out in this SCC tournament.
Yep.
They finished what on a 9-0 heater in conference play, something like that. 9-0, 10-0 heater in conference play.
Pretty good.
They're going to be an interesting follow in postseason. Really, really excited for them.
And if there's some home court action in College Station, I mean, I don't know how the tournament works for volleyball. Call
Yeah,
me
you
out.
can
My,
host. Yeah,
yeah.
there's yeah, you, yeah. They do regional. It's like basketball. Like they
Right.
have. Well, it's like
Like
small.
women's basketball.
I think like the first two rounds are like, like you're the one seed, so you get three teams in, and like you play a.
So it acts as a regional.
It's like a baseball regional, I believe.
Right.
And then like once you get to a certain level in the rounds, the locations are set. Like I don't think they keep it at home like all the way throughout the
Right.
tournament. Like you get a chance to, I believe, host first weekend and maybe second, but then it goes into host sites.
We'll keep an eye on those schedulings, and we'll make sure that if you're in town and you have the ability to do so, please go out and support the girls. They have built themselves up a fantastic little string of wins, great program on the rise. I mean, you've beaten Texas 2 years in a row, once in
Yeah,
Austin, once here. That's a big deal.
if you don't know, Texas is volleyball royalty. They are one of the absolute blue bloods when it comes to
Yeah,
volleyball.
that's like smoking them in swimming and diving. Like, that just doesn't happen.
Yeah, pretty
Like
much.
they've been absolutely on top of the world many, many times in volleyball. So knocking them off the perch, that's awesome.
Tonight, I believe it's tonight. Yeah, men's volleyball is at home with Montana. It's the Aggies can drive. You know,
Oh,
the
men's
drive that the
volleyball or men's hoops?
Men's hoops. We don't have men's volleyball.
I was about to say.
Yeah, no, men's hoops is at home against Montana. It's 7 p.m. tonight at Reed. If you can make it, bring cans. This is the big can drive. It's Aggie's can. It's the athletic department's kind of philanthropy.
Yeah.
So if you can make it to Reed, do so. Joni Taylor, night and day from last year. Women's basketball looking good so far.
Yeah.
So just exciting stuff in Aggieland. It's just what a great time to be an Aggie, right?
No complaints. We're doing all right over here. So I am going to go ahead and plug. We need to get you guys on for our socials. Be sure to follow Rob the Slapper on Instagram, on X. Be sure to follow Roy May 15 on X. Roy May Junior on Instagram, as well as the Red Ass Podcast on both. Be sure to follow us on the YouTube page. Give us a like, give us a comment, subscribe,
Turn on
let
your
us know that
notifications.
turn on your notifications. It's been good. The viewership has gone up a little bit. It's still not where we want it to be, of course, but it has grown, and we appreciate all of y'all jumping in on us and listening to two Ags just ramble on about football and other fun things. We appreciate y'all being
Yes.
involved and asking questions. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely appreciate it. Y'all share this with your friends if you think they'd like it.
Yeah. So
And
we've been on a bit of a tear. There have been some good ones.
if you can't stand our podcast and for some reason you're still here, share it with somebody you hate.
Please. Honestly, I want to get a comment from somebody that's got a little Longhorn logo as their profile pic. I want one of them commenting like, "These two guys don't even know what the hell they're talking
Don't know
about.
ball.
Good
Don't
America.
know ball.
They don't know ball. Who do you think you are? You get one good season and murder." Okay, I'm done. No, that's the end of my rolling there. I am Rob White. This is Roy May. We are the Red Ass Podcast. Take care. Beat the ever-living hell out of Samford. And we will see you guys same time next week. Gig 'em.
Yeah.